Moncrief on News Talk
with the Dacia Duster. Shockingly affordable, and now with 3 months deferred payments too.
World, why did the Western world become prosperous relatively early in world history, and why culturally is it distinctly different to everywhere else? Joseph Heinrich argues that the roots of it lie in religion and marriage. He's the author of The Weirdest People in the World: How the West Became Psychologically Peculiar and Particularly Prosperous. And Joseph joins us now on News Talk. Afternoon, Joseph.
Good afternoon. Good to be with you.
But now, before we address the differences, you argue you trace it back to a policy of the Catholic Church to do with marriage.
Yeah. So one of the key elements in the canvas that I lay out for how Westerners became psychologically unusual and what led to innovation in Western Europe and its cultural descendants in North America and Australia, was that what was then the Western Church began to lay down a series of prescriptions and prohibitions that transformed the families and the kin-based institutions, the marriage institutions of the European tribes at the time, breaking them down from, you know, intensive clans and kindreds and these other forms of tight kinship down into monogamous nuclear families. And this rolled out over centuries, and you begin to see the effects of it by about year 1000, but it continues rolling out over the next 500 years after that.
And these were rules such as you can't marry a cousin up to a certain point, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and that prohibition, it really was thought of as an incest taboo, begins with first cousins. So famously in England, in Kent around 600, they begin to implement the policies to prevent people from marrying first cousins. And it's a big problem. There's a lot of pushback from the populace. And the Catholic Church eventually extends that out to six cousins, which, of course, most people can't even track out to their six cousins. So that essentially eliminates anybody who you have any relation to. And also it eliminates all affines. So people who members of your family have married and then, say, died, they're also off the table in terms of marriage.
Now, and I suppose the net effect of that then is that for people to look for marriage partners, they have to go outside their tribe, essentially.
Exactly. So it forced people to go outside of their families and their clans. And often it was in two different clans would be intermarrying, but this forced them to go very far away. So in the book, I speculate that may be where European tribes went. So if you look at Europe in, you know, the time of the Romans, say late antiquity, everyone's divided into tribes, just like other places in the world are today. But then those tribes gradually dissolve. And we know from anthropological studies that one of the key things that makes a tribe dissolve is intermarriage between tribes. And this program would have created fertile conditions for that, especially since this program that the church was imposing would have created a lot of similarities between the tribes in terms of postmarital residence and other things that would be hard to negotiate when you're marrying between groups like that.
And so I suppose when people then have to start marrying intra-tribe, that makes tribes less important. And over time, does something supplant the tribe as the most important social structure?
Yeah, exactly. So I lay out that this opened up new opportunities in the history of Western Europe. It altered people's psychology, made them more individualistic, but it also meant that they had to build new relationships with strangers. So what you see forming in parts of Europe by about year 1000 is a proliferation of voluntary institutions. So there are things like what becomes guilds, universities, even these charter towns where people kind of join these, they become a member. The group provides a kind of safety net, care in old age. And so there are these mutual self-help societies that don't become very popular elsewhere in the world because people are still relying on these kin-based institutions. You know, your clan takes care of you in many places.
Now, the arrival of Protestantism, the Reformation, seemed to accelerate that process, plus also it brought in the role of science.
Well, so in the book, I emphasize Protestantism as something that needs to be explained. So Protestant is very unusual in that it sees the individual as able to read the sacred scriptures for themselves and come to their own decisions. And this led to, a big push to make everybody literate. The places that adopted Protestantism rapidly also became the most literate places in Europe. But in many ways, it also, I think Weber's right that it did change people's psychology. It made them more individualistic, even more individualistic than they already were. So in some ways, it accelerates or catalyzes the ongoing changes to society and how people thought about themselves in the world.
Now, I appreciate we've rushed through this to a certain extent, but in terms of how we view our communities and how communities should work, that over the period of those millennia has literally changed the way we think.
Yeah, so that was how I got into this, is I was working with some colleagues and we were putting together all the psychological evidence we could find on how people think about themselves, whether they're overconfident, whether they self-enhance, are they more motivated by guilt and shame, are they conforming to peers, do they think analytically or holistically, and a number of other features of psychology. And we found in domain after domain that people, the most common subjects that psychologists rely on for much of the data that occupies the textbooks, were unusual, that they occupy the extreme ends of the distributions. So when I realized this in about 2009 or 2010, I began this big project, which was to try to figure out where this variation was coming from and how we could explain it. And one of the key things seemed to be across societies was the structure of these kin networks. And then the question is, how did Europe get its unusual kin networks? And that took me back to the church, the Roman church.
Yeah, and I suppose one of the very interesting differences you point out is that the difference between guilt and shame, that guilt is predominant in the West and shame is predominant elsewhere.
Yeah, that's a striking pattern that anthropologists have noticed for a long time. But we find really strong correlations, you know, measuring guilt a few different ways. So there's a little bit of a technical definition here. So guilt is that feeling that you get when you haven't lived up to your own personal standards. Now, those personal standards could be influenced by your society, but you might have a personal standard of going to the gym or something like that. But that's not a societal standard. People don't think badly of you if you don't do that more generally. Whereas shame is about the societal standard. So it means you're spending a lot of your time making sure you don't break any social rules and living up to what other people expect you to do. And that seems to vary quite a bit along. We can even pick it up with internet searches.
Even in terms of in countries where the kin-based network is still remains and is still stronger, a completely different attitude towards nepotism.
Yeah, nepotism varies quite a bit around the world. So in some places, nepotism is a bad thing and you should avoid it. You want to hire impartially, hire the best person. Whereas in other places, it would be an immoral act not to hire your brother-in-law or not to do something to benefit your family at the expense of strangers or foreigners or people you don't know.
Yeah, that means Donald Trump disproves your theory.
Well, nepotism is always strongly resurgent. So one of the points in the book is that these kin-based institutions are anchored into our psychology. So they'll constantly try to reassert themselves. So it's a challenging feature of cultural evolution to try to maintain the more impersonal society based on impartiality, because they link into our evolved psychology and to differing degrees.
Joseph, thank you so much for speaking with us today. And I should also point out that the weird in the title of the book is an acronym for Western Educated Industrialized Rich Democratic. So the title of the book is The Weirdest People in the World, How the West Became Psychologically Peculiar and Particularly Prosperous. Joseph Henrich is the author. You're listening to The Moncrief Show on News Talk. We're going to take a break. Back in a couple of minutes.
Moncrief on News Talk.
With the Dacia range. Drive away today with no payments for the first 3 months.